Good morrow, and welcome back to The Realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into The Realm this evening, this is a vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis, and those creatives specialize in a plethora of different art forms. And as always, if you like what you hear tonight, you could find me and my epic and dark fantasy novels at jvhilliard.com, or go ahead and follow me at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter, Instagram. I guess it's X now. I keep saying Twitter, but it's X now. X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Or you can look for me at just as J.V. Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. I want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. Those, I know many of you listeners out there enjoy a good speculative fiction novel or some speculative poetry. Altered Reality Magazine does exactly that. They've got big-time award winners all the way down to first-time published authors. Check them out at alteredrealitymag.com. I know that just this week they released their winter magazine, which, by the way, happens to feature dark fantasy. So if you like that kind of stuff, and like my kind of stuff, you'll find some of that in there. Go check it out, alteredrealitymag.com. As we reach our witching hour tonight, let me cast my message spell and take control of the magical airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you Dungeons & Dragon nerds out there, and I know there are many, for the duration of my transmutation magic here is about 30 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. Today we're chronicling the adventures of a fellow speculative fiction scribe, Claudia Blood. Claudia, well met and welcome to the realm.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Hey, it's my pleasure. Before we get started, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, the kind of stuff you write, and where they can find you.
I would love to. I am a fantasy and sci-fi author, and I specialize mostly in the combination of the two. I'm found at claudiablood.com. I'm a wide author, and I'm also available on all of the different medias. I guess I'm not actually active on X, like you were saying earlier with Twitter, but everywhere else I'm author Claudia Blood.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on, and let's dive right into it. You know, I find that the mix is what you, the way you've kind of described that is a pretty interesting mix. I dabble in that where I cross just a little bit of sci-fi into my fantasy. And the way I do it, I make the excuse that it's kind of like Q from James Bond, where there's a scientific city that advances, you know, just enough science somewhere. And I find that that's a pretty cool, let's face it, you know, a lot of times when you get into fantasy, you're in a medieval realm of magic, but there never seems to be any advancement. There's still, you know, horses and buggies and castles and catapults,
right.
and then you've got this weird magic. But I introduce a little bit, just a dabble of sci-fi, just to get my readers satisfied, and they see something like that. And you see that in some, you know, there's, you know, like I think that you know, Sarah Moss is good at doing that. There's a few others that, you know, have Dragon Riders of Pern. You know, they you know, with Anne McCaffrey, they dipped into sci-fi meets fantasy. What brought you to that? Why did you decide to kind of merge two genres? It's not unique, but it's pretty close to being unique. And I think our listeners would like to know how you arrived at that being what you wanted to write in, and how do you quantify that? Like, where does that go? Where do they find you in a store somewhere?
Yep. So I started writing science fiction and fantasy together, and it's because I brought two loves together. I've got a science background. Biology, actually, was where I started from, and I loved physics, and I loved anything science-related because it had rules, right? That's the nice thing about science is there's rules and there's ways that you can advance it, and the possibilities are limitless. But I also have a love of Dungeons & Dragons. And so Dungeons & Dragons, again, has the rules, but it's very fantasy-based. There's magic. There's mystical creatures, there's all sorts of things. And so by combining those together, having something that is very rules-based, but having, you know, I've got one set of rules that is mostly science with a little bit of fantasy, and then I have another set of books that are mostly fantasy with science because it's modern technology and it's, you know, some advancement that way. And so bringing those two together, it's so much fun. It has so many possibilities and just opens up the things that you can do.
It does, you know, and even, I mean, you mentioned Dungeons & Dragons. D&D did that, too, when they were promoting, at the time, was Star Frontiers and Gamma World. They started to kind of cross-pollinate, and there were modules that they had created that were specifically like that. So you could take your D&D characters and play in a sci-fi realm. And vice versa, right? So, like, you know, and I think it's the same person. Like, sure, I might like fantasy more than I like sci-fi, But I can guarantee you, if a Star Wars or a Star Trek movie's out, my butt is in that movie theater. You know, or someone's going to throw, you know, another sci-fi, another Aliens book out there, throw me some Predator. I'm in, I'm going to do that, whether it's graphic novels, whether it's, you know, traditional writing, or whether it's movies,
Absolutely.
Netflix, you're going to find me there. So I think it's the same type of person that likes that. And I think that's how you can, I'm guessing how that's how you get away with that kind of stuff. What do your readers say about that? I mean, you get a positive response from them when they
I
leave
do, I
reviews
do.
or when you run into them at places?
Yep, they really do. The thing that I guess I'm known for is I've got a lot of creative twists and a lot of, you know, you didn't really see that coming, but within the world, it totally made sense. Like they look back and be like, oh yeah, oh my God, how didn't I see that? But so I think the science though and the fantasy elements give you more tools that you can use. As long as you're smart about it, they can't conflict. If you know what I mean, like you have to make sure that that particular series follows that set of rules that you've laid out. So like you were saying, a lot of fantasy, there's no technology, so they don't have to worry about it, but they still have the horses and they still have to deal with all the realities of that. And for the book to be realistic, it needs to follow the rules of that, that horses need to rest, right? Like things like
yeah,
that
you know,
in order for people to be happy with it.
no,
And so
that's
it's the same sort of
absolutely
thing.
right. And it sounds like someone has a scientific mind and a background like you do that comes kind of natural to them. I had this giant debate one time when I was in college with my roommates, and it ended up being 2 versus 2, where it was Darth Vader versus Conan the Barbarian, who would win in a fight. And of course, I was the one with all the rules in my favor. I'm like, well, Darth Vader has a laser sword, and he cuts Conan's metal sword in half, and the fight's over, right? But they were saying, well,
Right.
how Conan would, you know, he would invoke the, you know, Krom and the gods, and he was stronger. He could have, he, you know, his neck was so thick that, you know, Vader's force choke wouldn't work on him, and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, no, my laser sword still beats your sword, right? So I guess it's like a fine line where you've got to walk that, right? It's like, you know, it's almost like you don't want to give, like you've got all these fantasy things going on, and all of a sudden, oh, the spaceship shows up and, you know, they nuke the site from orbit,
exactly.
Right? You know, like an alien,
exactly.
Steal an alien
fly.
Yeah, so you've
right.
got to be real careful, and that's perceptive of you. I think that's absolutely the right way to, I would put that. Well, let me, you know, pivot here for a second, because I know that the kind of stuff you write is also something that you do for young adult readers. And I think that all of us at one time were young adult readers, and we grew into new adult readers and then adult readers. And I think that there's a way that, you know, that at that age, you know, certain genres pull you in, and sci-fi fantasy is one of those that does that. Do you find that a lot of your readers continue to read through as they age and they grow in their reading journeys? Do you see that? Do you see people, are you pulling people through to older novels in the same way that J.K. Rowling did with Harry Potter? She started out with Sorcerer's Stone, and hey, you're 10 years old, but by the end of the series, you're 18. You know what I mean? Do you do that, or how do you handle that in your YA series?
You know, it's funny because I've had a better response for older individuals reading the YA series than I've had the actual YA audience. So I've actually rebranded that as adult. It was the craziest thing. And so it's like my target audience is a little bit older. Like it's almost like, this is going to sound really silly, but almost like the YA audience is almost more cynical about some of the things. Like there's just so much out there in YA, and with my stuff being relatively clean, they don't seem to be interested. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, you know, that's funny you mentioned that, because I still read YA. I'll dip into YA all the time, because a lot of books that target our genres, like sci-fi and fantasy, they target that kind of, you know, I guess as you get older,
exactly.
You oftentimes kind of peel away from that, and you're looking for historical fiction or urban fantasy, and I know you do urban fantasy. We'll get into that in a second, but you know, the idea behind it often strikes, you know, people with open imaginations, and you find those folks when you're younger. But I just think it's a fandom. Like I honestly, from my side, I'll read that all day long. Like I read the Twilight series. I'm not embarrassed to say
I don't
it, right?
I.
You know, yeah, it's like, all right. Yeah. And I read it in my 30s, you know. You know, it's like, but you just, you find that stuff, or I'll watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I know that's not targeted for me, but it's campy, and it's fun, and it's, you know, it's fun to watch, and so I don't mind it kind of being you know, it might not be Shakespeare or Hawthorne,
right?
But, you know, it doesn't have to be, right? It just has
it
to be entertaining,
have to
right?
be.
So,
yes,
yeah.
There's a whole series of adults that that's exactly what they're looking for, myself included. I want something fun that takes me away from my life that I can totally engage in. That's just, like you said, fun and engaging.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to pivot again here. Before we get into your urban fantasy stuff, I want to talk about the Relic trilogy for a second. And the reason I do, well, there's a couple of reasons. One is I've started to read. Secondly, I love your covers. I don't know if you get a lot of compliments on the covers. Do you design them? Is it somebody, do you go out and get an illustrator to design them? You know, the colors pop, they scream, you know, fantasy, in this case, sci-fi fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they're really cool and they look like they're part of a series. When you see them on a shelf, you're like, I know what that is. That engages me right away.
They're branded really well.
And I'm going to go grab that and turn it over and read the blurb, right? So do you do your own covers or do you have someone do them for you?
I don't. I am not. I was an artist way back when, but that I never translated that into covers. And so I do hire someone to do my covers just because I want them to be right.
Yeah, well, they're
so
definitely
Kelly did
they're
ones,
definitely set for your genre
job.
For sure. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Well, good.
I've got a rebranding coming too. The Merge series.
Oh,
I've got some gorgeous covers coming. Gorgeous covers.
Oh, good.
They're
you.
Just amazing.
I know they're coming out too.
Yeah.
So excited.
That's all right. Well, tell us a little bit about the Relic trilogy. I know that. Would you say that's your most popular series?
It is. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit about it, then we can get into it a little bit here.
Yeah, so this series is set in the future in a distant jungle planet, and it's basically the main character is an orphan who's getting repressed by the system, so it's a bit dystopian, and they're trying to make the orphans into assassins. That's the whole kind of culture that they're coming up with, and he escapes from that and ends up on this epic adventure where he ends up having to save the world because there is a time anomaly, a time rift that's nearby that's causing things from Earth's past to go to this planet, including people, and it's causing all sorts of crazy things to happen. And it's getting bigger and bigger. And without him and his team, his crew, trying to battle the things that are keeping it open, it will basically eat the whole universe. It'll cause, you know, everything to explode. It's very technical, but everything explodes. And there are words for that, but I was like, woo, explosions are good.
Well, no, that's mixing the sci-fi with the fantasy, right? Like you mentioned before. What I like about it is I think, you know, the time-space continuum stuff is a real nice – it's malleable. It's amorphous. You can use that because people really don't know. But there's enough science around it where you can justify things. And when I was younger, I read the Time War series by Simon Hawke, and I fell in love with the idea of time stuff. And it was a sci-fi – you know, it was – I would not say it was young adult by any stretch, but, you know, it was – you know, the ability to go back in time and how they would change the time, basically the timeline, and then have multiple timelines. And there was enough science in it that if you were in your physics 2 class in 11th grade or whatever it was,
you
could kind of follow along to it.
right.
But it was just you can bend it, you know, and Hawk bent it in a way where it was like, all right, well, you know, it's not, we know it's not canon, but we'll live with
real,
it, right?
Right?
And that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So what's the reaction been from the fan base here? I mean, do they like that when you're taking, because the time stuff allows you to do a lot of things where you're moving stuff around. So fantasy, it makes something fantastical very believable when you start mixing in, you know, time, space, continuum stuff.
Yep. They really liked it. And one of the pieces of feedback I got is that they love the bad guy. So Ravine is the bad gal in this series. And her whole arc is she's trying to save her daughter in the past. And a future self told her she needed to invent time travel. And so this whole dystopian society was created by her in an effort to actually create time travel to save her daughter. And so because of that feedback, that's how the Renegades Rising series came about. And so that's going to go through the history of how Ravine got to where she was and the whole setup for the Relic trilogy.
And you have, what, 5 books in that Renegade series? Is that right?
It might be 4 with another one coming. I have to actually write them down because I forget.
That's okay. And is that in the Merged World series, which is your third series that you have, Is that part of this too? Because of the, just by the name, it sounds like it is. I mean, so do you see this as like you're writing in one big realm and this is, and all of your series kind of fit into this like Stephen King, or are they all separate worlds?
Right now, the Merge series right now is completely separate. I mean, I have like the inkling of ideas of how it could come together, but it hasn't quite happened. The Renegades Rising and the Relic Trilogy are the same world, different timelines. And then the Supernatural Detective Agency, that other one that I have out there, the Urban Fantasy, is at this point still separate, but I mean, it's in a different path. So it could be the same world without like stretching the imagination too much of the Renegades Rising and the Relic Trilogy.
Let's talk about that for a little bit. And for those of us that are listening, that we have many readers that listen to our show and obviously authors and just generally creatives, but a lot of folks are readers. I get the remarks and the direct messages afterwards and talk about it. And a lot of them just like to read. Urban fantasy, describe for those who don't know what that is, what urban fantasy is. And then why did you kind of migrate from sci-fi fantasy into an urban fantasy, especially a detective urban fantasy series?
I had this idea for a story that wasn't quite science fiction, but it wasn't quite fantasy. It was set in, this one's actually sort of like an urban, but it's a small urban setting kind of up in Ely, Minnesota. So it's kind of like a small town, and the supernatural is just beneath the surface. So if you're not in the know, it looks like a normal human town. But if you're in the know, there's actually all of the supernatural phenomena going on. And so it was the story that came to me, and you know how you have to kind of follow the ideas. It was this woman who didn't realize that she was part of the supernatural community, and she was targeted by some doppelgangers as a way to fake their own deaths, right? And so there's this whole convoluted plot line where she's introduced to the fact that not only is she part of the supernatural world, but, you know, inherited witch, so she's got some witch powers, and she doesn't remember any of it. And so it just was, it didn't fit nicely in either world, and urban fantasy felt right for where that storyline needed to go.
Yeah, it almost feels like you could step right into that. And the detective stuff gives it that urban setting, too. It almost is like, you know, I think a lot of folks do that when they get to urban fantasy. There's always that cop or the suspense thriller aspect
right.
of what you're doing with that.
And it was very suspenseful. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to ask you this question because a lot of people, I find this odd. And I didn't expect this, but I get this a lot at shows when I'm at conventions or my book signings. People love my villains, and I get more compliments on them than I do my heroes. And at some points, that bothers me a little bit because you're trying to write these heroes that people can love and respect and follow. But I always get the other side of it where it's like, oh, I love the assassin, or oh, I love your big bad evil guy. And so I take that as a compliment for what it's worth. But, you know, you mentioned Ravine before. You know, is she your favorite villain?
Oh, she actually is, yeah, because she is the typical, like, where she didn't start off evil, right? But in the process of pursuing her goals so closely, she kept making more and more decisions and kept getting disconnected from humanity and ended up evil, or at least the action she was taking was perceived that way. So, I struggle with her because she's a brilliant scientist. She came up with all of this great technology. You know, she loved her daughter and then kind of just went over the deep end when her daughter had died. And what made it worse is, she felt like she was at fault for why her daughter died, that she hadn't, you know, paid attention to her. And it was actually her first faster than light drive, the exhaust from that ended up getting her daughter. And so she was absolutely devastated. So, but yes, she is my favorite villain. As a mom, I can relate to, you know, the question of how far would you go for your kids if they were in trouble? And with her tools, it made her a super interesting character.
Yeah, not only that, but, you know, to be honest, the storyline's believable. I mean, first of all, you got this, like, brilliant scientist who becomes a mad scientist, and there's people that cross over. I mean, sometimes when you're too much of a genius, you're disconnected from everybody anyway, right? There's nobody that can identify with you, or very few people that do. unless you've got this like Sherlock Holmes Moriarty foil thing going on. And in this case, was it hard for you as a writer to kind of cast yourself to write her as sort of this villainous, I don't want to call her a main character, but a villainous main villain? You know, did you find it hard to write that? It sounded to me like you had some conflict in there.
I did. And the thing that disconnected her too was time dilation. So if you're traveling around the universe and every time you come back to humanity, everybody that you knew is older and has moved on, there's no one for you to connect with. So I think that also, you know, added to her whole like isolation from everything. But she was really hard because she made some choices that I would never make those choices. She's killed numerous people. She set people up for, you know, getting eaten by demons. She's, you know, done a whole colony where she, you know, basically crushed their souls underneath them and bribed all the officials and all the rest of it. I mean, she's done some terrible, terrible things. And so, but her, who she was, totally in line with who she is, right? Like, I couldn't imagine actually doing anything like that, but that's who she was, right? So I let her do what she wanted to do.
So I'm going to ask you, because a lot of our listeners are readers, as I mentioned earlier, and some of them are aspiring authors. So I want to ask a few things about the authorship that involve this. So, you know, from this perspective, was there anything that you had to edit out of the book that you hated to edit out of the book? I know a lot of folks ask, I get that, like what hit the film room floor? You know, what did you cut out that you didn't want to cut out when it went through the editing process? Did you have anything like that where you're like, oh, this is great, but your editors came back and they're like, no, this isn't great, or this belongs somewhere else, and you end up taking it out and then you just keep it for later? Like, did you find something hard that was, how did that work out for you? Not necessarily about her, but any of your books. I mean, do you regret taking some stuff out, or do you eventually concede and give up and say, you know what, editing and beta readers are right, I got to move this, it doesn't fit, but damn, I want to keep this and relaunch it somewhere else.
I do the second one, but I keep it. Like, if I think it's an awesome nugget that I'm going to use somewhere, I've got this whole, like, idea generator with, like, deleted scenes from various, you know, novels that, you know, I keep thinking I'm going to come back to it, and that would make, like, an amazing story if I could make that all work together in some crazy ways. Now, names would have to change to, you know, to protect the innocent, but I think it's an excellent, right? Because I loved it enough to keep it. So how could I use that in some future work? But yes, if a beta reader or an editor tells me that this is not working and what I'm doing, you know, isn't true to the character or doesn't fit in the timeline, or, you know, is like, why is it here? It's not actually forwarding the plot. Then I do give in, because I want to produce the best books that I can. And I'm sometimes not the best judge. Like, writers, when you're in the middle of it, you're not the best judge if it's a good book. Dude, you're like, you're right there. You're in the forest. You can't, you know, you're seeing these trees and you're not seeing the forest. And so you have to trust the experts and some of the other people to, you know, to help you and make sure you're making good decisions. Now, there have been other ones, and I'm like, you didn't get it, so I need to clarify this because I'm not being clear enough about this point. And I'll edit somewhere else to make what they saw work. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, and that's good too. I mean, you don't always have to listen, but if you hear it multiple times, then you know there's an issue, right? You know, it's like, oh, like you get that a lot. And I'll tell you, this is my secret. And for those of you listening, if you ever comes to this, I've taken some of the stuff that I've cut out, I stick it in a folder telling me that I'm going to use it one day. And when you go on a blog tour and people ask you for snippets and you offer them something that isn't in the book or something that hit the drawing room floor or hit the film room floor, they love that stuff. And it ends up in their newsletter, it ends up in their blog. And it's only but at least you feel like it got out there, right?
I got it into the
realm, and someone might read their blog and learn the backstory about this character that wasn't important enough to make the book, but damn it, I got it out there, you know, and you feel good about it. So I snuck it out. Well, look, as strange as this is, we've been talking for 24 minutes already, and we're to the end of our time, and I don't feel like we've even scratched the surface, but every week I do a lightning round with my guests. The listeners love it, and so I'm going to throw some questions at you, and, you know, in fast order, just to have some fun, and, you know, if you surprise me with something, we'll go a little deeper in the conversation, but let me know when you're ready. And if you're ready, we're going to go right into the lightning round.
Do it. I'm ready.
All right. So you're invited to a lunch, and it's with one other author or a poet, and they could be either living or dead. Who would that person be and why?
So if I was going to dinner with, it'd be Anne McCaffrey. Absolutely.
Ah, so I brought her up earlier by accident. I didn't realize you were a big fan. That's great. Well, why Anne? Yeah. Tell us why Anne.
I loved what she did with the Dragon Riders of Pern and just, you know, having real people in different places, future planets and things like that. I found that just incredible, especially for a young kid when I was reading it. So.
Yeah, they're just good books. So, second question. You hear a knock on your door, and you go to the door, and you find out someone has slipped a plane ticket to anywhere in the world that you can go, but it can't be a place you've already gone. Where would that be?
I would love to go to Australia, hands down, and New Zealand, like that whole area, and go down under. I think that'd be amazing. Just the animals, and I love, like, the platypus. Like, seriously, how cool is that? And some of the way that they do with their marsupials. The biologist in me is just squeeing, like, woo!
I was going to say, yeah, that's you go and you're at the far side of the world, and that exploration's got to be fun for someone like you and with your background. That's cool. All right, this is a popular question. Everybody asks me to ask it all the time, so I keep asking it. So if you've listened to any of the shows, you already know what's coming. But what was the best money you've ever spent as an author, and why?
We're going to go back to what you said earlier, covers. Like the rebranding and the covers, I think that's like your first flush. The person who's looking at your work, that's the first thing that they see. It leaves their impression. And if they don't like that, they're out. It's an instant out. So the best money I've spent is on covers and rebranding.
100% agree. That's a great, great thing. I mean, there's a lot of places where you can spend money, but that's a place you shouldn't skimp. And, you know, mm-hmm. I definitely agree. And it's got to look like your genre. It's got to scream your genre. And that's the first thing people do. If they don't like the cover, they don't turn the book over to read the blurb. And if they don't read the blurb, they don't buy the book. So I totally
exactly.
get it. Final question. There's a library burning, and you rush in to help, and you can only save one book, and it can't be one of yours. What book do you save and why?
Okay. I totally want to save the second edition Dungeons & Dragons Monster Manual.
Oh, my God. Why second edition? Everybody loves the classic first edition.
Well,
is it because
okay, I could do first
no
edition. Like, I don't know. I just love that. I have it still, the second edition, and I love looking through it. It's like old memories and just art on there was just amazing.
Ridiculous. So much fun. And it was at the time, what the game has become is entirely – evolved and it's better, and I'll give it credit for that. But those advanced D&D games, I mean, just back in the day, Ravenloft, The Vault,
yep.
Tomb of Horror, I mean, you name it, hard to beat that. And some of those covers kick butt too. I bought the Tomb of Horror just because the Lich was on the front.
course,
I didn't know anything about
right?
it. I was like, I'm gonna buy this, and the module kicks your ass. But anyway, so look, we're coming to the end of our duration here, and I only have a couple of minutes left. Tell everybody one more time where they can reach you and how they can buy your stuff.
I am a wide author, so I am on all of the electronics, so Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, the whole nine yards, Smashwords. I am at ClaudiaBlood.com, and I've got a Facebook group, Claudia's Adventures, if you want to interact more on a day-to-day basis. With bad puns, too. I really like dad jokes.
Oh, my God. No, please, no. No dad jokes here. So, well, first off, Claudia, thank you very much for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. For those of you who haven't checked out her stuff, trust me, it's worth a check. Go and take a look. You will not be disappointed. And lastly, I want to thank our sponsor again one more time, alteredrealitymagazine.com. That's alteredrealitymag.com. Go check that out for your speculative fiction and your speculative poetry. Read an oldie but goodie. They've got classics on there. They've got award-winning authors on there, and they've got newbies on there that are trying to make a name. Go and support them. And again, thanks, Claudia, for being on the show. And to our followers, thanks again for lending us your ear tonight. And until next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you. Thanks, Claudia. Appreciate your time.